I think I'm in the wrong room, I think. Lower hand. Guys, I'm so happy that I met you. I have to go now. I have to go to school. I think this is wrong. So I'm sorry, guys. Bye-bye. No response. They don't want to see me by out. Scheiße.
Yes, I heard you. And the echo. We're having a few technical issues on our end. AEP typically doesn't use Zoom, so a few of us are having, we just need another moment to get logged in.
Renee, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Thank you. And yes, I sure can. And no worries. You have a couple minutes here before you need to get on, so no problem.
Okay. And will you be able to put the PowerPoint up for us?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you real well.
Will you be able to put the PowerPoint up for us?
Yes, I sure will. No problem. Got your email. All right, friends, we will go ahead and get started here. So welcome, everyone, to the Village of Galena Council meeting for Monday, August 30th at approximately 7:01. So, Suzanne, if you want to go ahead and do the roll call.
Since we're in person, I can see that everybody's here.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody, for being here tonight. It's great to see you all. All right. Were there any questions at all before we approve the minutes of July 26th? Anybody have any thoughts, ideas, comments?
I have one comment on the detour for the Galena Fest. First off, it was amazing again. We've got to, on future events, reroute down Home Street, not High Street. High Street's just not built for the traffic that we were getting last week. So that's just a thought I had. Going forward, I'd like to try to set up the signs to get on Home so that it's commercial and it's got bigger entrances and exits. So.
Okay. So we'll talk a little bit further about Galena Fest at a little further into the meeting. And for now, if there's not any other questions, can I get a motion to approve the minutes on July 26th?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. And thank you, Mike. Just a second. Thank you. All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The minutes have been approved for July 26th. Now we'll move the minutes from July 16th. Any questions regarding the special council meeting? All right. Great. Then may I get a motion to approve the minutes of July 16th?
So moved.
All right. Thank you, David. And a second, please.
Second.
Thank you, Ruben. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. The minutes have been approved for the July 16th special council meeting. And we have our minutes from our August 5th meeting, another special council meeting that we had. Are there any questions related to that particular meeting? All right, looks good. All right, may I get a motion to approve the August 5th special council meeting minutes?
So moved.
All right, thank you, David. And a second, please.
Second.
Thank you, Ruben. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, thank you. The minutes of August 5th have also been approved. Thank you so much. This evening, we are going to dive right into our guest participants. And we have three this evening, and we are going to get started this evening. If I can invite you up to the mic, Sheila. Sheila Hiddleston from our Delaware General Health District. So thank you so much, especially in this time, to come visit us.
Oh.
Be on top.
We'll have one of our songsters help you out. Hello, hello. Okay. All right. Well, it is so good to see you all. A little closer. You know, I might start singing. Right? Sheila Hiddleston, your health commissioner. It is so nice to see you all. It's so nice to be out and about and being able to come out and visit some folks. Although our numbers are not looking great right now,
We did decide in about the middle of July that we would start going back out to our partners and making sure that we're all still connecting really well. Zoom is fine and Teams are fine, but, you know, it's not the same as being together person to person. So we are seeing an increase in our cases. We had a low about the second week of July, and they've slowly gone back up. We are working very closely with all of our school districts, as most of them have now been in session for about 7 days. Galena should be commended. Of your eligible residents who can be vaccinated, so that's the 12 and over, you all are sitting at 75%. That's an amazing number. So
that's
kudos
so
to all of you for that. And then of all of your residents, you're sitting at 63%. That includes the little ones who can't be vaccinated yet. But again, that's really a good number. Delaware County as a whole, we are actually still number one in the state for our vaccination rate. But we're still seeing cases, and you all know with the variant, the Delta variant, we are continuing to see cases. The current vaccine is effective against that, at keeping you out of the hospital, and we're not having any deaths of a vaccinated person. So good news that we're not having as many hospitalizations. Bad news is we're still having the spread of disease. In the last 2 weeks, in the 43021, right? 4321, you've had 47 cases, and that's over the last 2 weeks. In the county as a whole, we're seeing about 21 per day per 100,000, so that's about 42 cases every day in the entire county. You all have had the 47 over the last 2 weeks. Over the last 2 weeks, we've placed 424 people into isolation. That number used to be counted as confirmed. What we're not able to do anymore is call and release people from isolation. We give them their dates and then have them call us if they need anything, if they need any of their ADLs met or anything, then we'll go out and take care of those things. But we just don't have the staffing to call everybody and release them. So technically, we can't call that number confirmed anymore because we don't go back on the 14th day or the 10th day and make sure that they're still doing it. We know they are because otherwise they would call us, but we just can't call that confirmed anymore. A couple of other things not related to COVID. We are getting ready to do our next community health assessment. So you may remember that as an accredited health district, we're required to do community health assessments every 3 to 6 years. It kind of goes on a different cycle. We work definitely with all of our hospital systems to do that. So we do the adult and the youth one this year, and then in next year we'll do the youth one. So the adults and the young, the adults and the younger, 0 to 11, and then anyone over 18, we're going to be doing that again this fall. Your residents may get one of those. The best practice still is to send that out in the mail. It's not going to be electronic, although there will be some electronic options, but they'll get an envelope when they get it. Please help us spread the word. It really is legitimate. It really is from the Delaware Public Health District. It's not from someone else. We don't ask any personal information. We do ask a few demographic questions, but nothing related to Social Security or anything like that. It really is just for us to get a feel of what's going on in our community. The other one then is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, and we do that with all of our schools on the opposite years, and we do one with the middle school and the high school. Last time we had about 13,000 children in the county who responded to that. So we're very fortunate in Delaware County that we get really good data with really high confidence intervals. Other than that, is there anything that the village is working on that we can work on with?
Anybody have any questions?
Sheila, you went through a lot of statistics there in a short period of time. You said no deaths. What was it you were saying about no deaths?
The deaths that we have had were, we haven't had any deaths of vaccinated persons.
And that's countywide.
That's countywide within the district.
I also have another question for you about it. Are you counting just the residents, or are you counting, when you're talking about your COVID cases, are you counting based on the residents if they go outside of Delaware County into another, like Ohio State or Ohio Health, or are you just doing the ones that come into Grady Memorial and into the, or any other Delaware County health facility?
So that's a great question. A lot of times people don't know how that works. So for communicable diseases, we count everyone who has a communicable disease that lives within Delaware County. So even if our residents are in another hospital, or they're diagnosed outside of the county, they still get counted in our statistics.
Okay. Were there any other questions at all from anyone on Zoom or out in our audience today? Well, thank you so much, Sheila.
If you all need anything, please don't hesitate to call. I'll be back again, hopefully, this year. And then Jen Wilson is still your regular representative. Yeah. I think since I was coming tonight, she took the night off.
Okay.
So, but please let me know if there's anything that you all need. We're trying to get things more back to normal with the surge. We're having to send a few more people back to our COVID team, but trying to continue to do all of our more normal things after the last 19 months.
You guys have been amazing. I mean, beyond amazing. It has been just an honor, number one, to work with you for the village and all the community around us. We hear nothing but wonderful things about all you're doing in Delaware County and the countless hours that you all have put in and your wonderful staff. So please thank everyone as well. You do a phenomenal job, Sheila. Thank you.
Well, we're very fortunate we have great staff. Yes, we could not do what we do without the group.
Thank you. Big job. Thank you. All right, so next I'll invite Mr. Curtin up. I'm going to bring up a PowerPoint and share that. I'm assuming that's park update trustee meeting?
Yep.
Okay, perfect.
So will you advance the slides? Is that how we'll...
I can do that and share it. So if you just give me just 1 minute.
Okay.
There we go. There we go. Perfect. All right, should come up in just a minute. There we go. All right, and let me just put you in a little different format here. Oh, there we go. Okay.
All right, great.
Hold on. Sorry. To be there.
Oh. All right, Jen, can you hear me okay through the mic?
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is advancing for some odd reason. Let me bring that. Okay. All right, let's hope it doesn't advance. There I said. Okay, I think we're good. So.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
First of all, thanks for making time tonight. If I can just stop in and fill you in on what we've been up to and some things that are going on this year project-wise. So we can go to the next slide, which is a slide of the county showing you where our parks are currently. I'd like to point out a couple of things. As you look to the upper right-hand corner there, you'll see a brown dot and the brown sign for Future Park. That's currently a life estate that we have up in Porter Township. And we come to us actually next year, so we're going to begin master planning that and bringing that online within the next year and a half. We're also working on a future park south of Alum Creek Dam along Bell Canyon Road, which includes the Bicentennial Barn. And another future park that we're actually on phase two, and we'll see a slide as we go through the program, on Pollock Road just south of the city of Delaware. So even though we had the pandemic last year, we didn't skip a beat. We kept buying land and working on opening parks and doing programs, not in person, but virtually. So we can go to the next slide. And attendance really soared last year because of the pandemic. Had about 60% increase in visitation due to the pandemic. This year, we are down to pre-pandemic levels, basically, of visitation. We made some adjustments to staffing last year, keeping our maintenance folks on until about 8 o'clock in the evening so that we could sanitize the parks. Go on to the next slide. And one of the things we did as far as land acquisition, and this gets to that new park I was talking about south of Allen Creek Dam, along Bell Canyon Road, and bisected by Route 71, as you can see. We've been working with a family and acquiring 235 acres over a period of 6 years. Last year, we purchased Phase 5, which is the Red Star, and this year, we purchased the yellow area just above it, which now completes the land acquisition. And we're moving into our master planning process right now. We've hired a firm to help us evaluate that bicentennial barn. The goal is to renovate the barn and turn it into a year-round facility so that residents can rent it and we can use it for park programs. Go to the next slide. This is giving you a close-up now of the area. We actually have to move the barn into the property about 60 feet. Bell Canyon Road is going to be widened. There's a sewer coming down there and a bike trail, so we wanted to maintain some distance between the barn and the road, so that will be moved in. And you can see where we're planning the parking area, and there's going to be lots of hiking trails, and there'll be a picnic shelter and a playground for kids as well. The other thing we did there, same property, this is on the east side of Bell Canyon Road. There was a stream that had really been channelized and ditched over the years by the farmer, and so we were able to go back in working with Orange Township trustees, and we were able to meander that stream, reestablish a floodplain. We've done a lot of planting of native habitat, so we're improving water quality into Allen Creek with this project. And we also were able to purchase 21 acres across from Sharmar Ridge Park on Lewis Center Road, which is immediately adjacent to the Ohio to Erie Trail. And the idea is to use this 21 acres as a trailhead or access to the Ohio to Erie Trail there in Genoa Township. And we're also going to offer some trailside camping for folks who are through biking the trail. So again, that's for folks who are through biking. It won't be just a standard type of campground that anybody can use. So we're really looking forward to bringing that online. And this is Hickory Woods Park. This is the new park I was talking about that's on Pollock Road, south of the city of Delaware. This is an artist's conception of what will be there. Phase one has been completed, which is the pond is in now, a sledding hill has been constructed. We're establishing trails, entrance drive, and parking lots. The building you see will be, probably be phase three in a year or so, and that will be an enclosed building that we'll be able to use year-round. Another facility, again, that citizens will be able to rent for a variety of purposes and will use it for programming as well. Sycamore Run Park. We were able to open up this park this year. It's a small park, 22 acres, and that was donated to us by the individual who developed the Trails End development across the street there on Olentangy, the intersection of Olentangy and Home Road. And so that is now open. You can access Olentangy for canoeing and kayaking and fishing. We've been active at Gallant Farm, doing some improvements to the, and that's last time, to the house. Built a new corn crib, and staff used hand tools from the 1930s, keeping with the Depression era theme of the farm. And we have been slowly enclosing fields as we add livestock, and this year we were able to add cow and calf along with the sheep. So that's expanding our programming from that standpoint. And the Ohio to Erie Trail, making great strides on that. We were able to build 2.5 miles of the trail last year. This year, we're getting ready to build another 1.4 miles, and that will bring the trail down to Hartford Road, just outside the village of Sunbury. Next year, we will take it from Hartford Road into Sunbury on the trestle across Big Walnut Creek, and we'll be connected then to the village at that point in time. And this is a map that shows you what we've been able to accomplish. A couple of things, starting at the upper right-hand corner, you see the dotted red line. That's in Licking and Knox counties. And they're in the process of building that trail, and hopefully it will be done by next year, linking to the solid green line you see, which is going from County Line Road there to Merida State Road. The dotted green line is what we built last year. The red dotted line is what we're building this year. And next year, like I said, we'll be able to come across Big Walnut Creek and into the village. We also, staff constructed a new aviary at Deerhaven Park. We have the Amy Clark Bader Bird Sanctuary there. And we've been working with an organization called Ohio Nature Education. And they are a rehab center that deals with injured birds, more than mammals. And so we are working with them and housing different birds. And these birds are changed out every 3 or 4 months, so there's always new birds there, and it's all part of our educational offering and keeping with the theme of the bird sanctuary there at Deerhaven. And we do a lot of restoration work with the property that we purchased, planting tens of thousands of trees. We do a lot of seeding of native meadow plants and prairie plants, and we remove tile in these old farm fields so that restores the natural hydration that occurred there prior to the agricultural activity taking place. And we also do a lot of management as far as invasive species, removing non-native plants in the parks. The other thing we do is we create wetlands, and we are creating a couple of wetlands at Emily Traphagen Park, which is on Selden Scene Road, just north of the zoo. And this is, again, something we do to enhance habitats and attract wildlife. We did a lot of virtual programming and did some things that we haven't done in the past. The Winter 100 was a new program that we did, and we offered people the opportunity to hike 100 miles or 100 kilometers, and we had 1,400 people sign up for that. First time we've done anything like that, had excellent response. The letterbox program that we do with the library has always been a big hit, and this year we brought it out in the winter. Had about 600 hardy souls participate in that activity. And then last summer we did the Discover Delaware County scavenger hunt, where we had folks looking for clues throughout the entire county. We also rolled out a new logo, the Fox Leaf logo, updating the logo from the trees that we've had since the inception of the park district. It's been very well received so far, and is really helping us stand out, which is what we wanted to do. Now, this is a really interesting land acquisition project. Again, just started northeast of the village of Sunbury along U.S. Route 3. We are purchasing about 475 acres from the Sandal family. We were able actually to purchase 3.5 miles of railroad right-of-way from the Sandals, which has enabled us to really do all this great work on the Ohio Erie Trail. And they circled back to us and said, hey, would you be interested in our farm? So there's a lot of unique features to their property. Phase one that you can see there in green, we just acquired this year, and includes a historic Redbrook schoolhouse, a perfect schoolhouse, which we will use for cultural programming. There's some interesting stream activity on the property as well, so a lot of natural history and cultural history that we'll be able to do. We're showing a 6-acre acquisition strategy. We are going to be on the ballot in November, and when that levy passes, we'll actually be able to shorten that acquisition strategy to 4 years, which will enable us to open that park quicker. So that's been exciting to work on that. We're doing a variety of work, increasing the size of our parking lots. So last year, we've always known that the parking lots have been too small. Last year, we really experienced a crunch on parking. So we're slowly beginning to expand our parking lots. This happens to be at Charmar Ridge, where we're expanding. We're also doing some work, again, at the farm, putting these overhangs over the granaries so that we can increase our outdoor programming. And you can see what the entrance signs will look when the new logo is retrofitted on that. And that's the end.
I was just going to say, no COVID lag for you all. That's incredible.
No,
that was really incredible. Thank you.
And an exciting year. And the other thing that's interesting, during COVID, we were approached by several other families, not only Walt and Kathy Sandel, but there's another 800 acres that people have offered us throughout the county for acquisition. which is why the board decided to go on the ballot in November with this 4/10 of a mill levy for 10 years so that we could acquire the property and then develop these new parks.
Really exciting. Thank you. Is there anybody online that has any questions? I know that I've been reading some things on some of the local groups and are very excited about some of these acquisitions that you've shared so far. People certainly use the parks around here in the trails.
Yeah, we're very fortunate for the support.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much. Anybody else have some questions?
I don't know if you're aware, but the Village of Galena was designated as the B-City USA, and we've been trying to establish a program of creating some native seedings in the areas of the village that can't be built upon.
Yep.
And the program that we were trying to work with has a minimum acreage requirement in order to get free seed. And I see that you guys are doing some similar plantings and was curious about what your source for seeds was.
We've been buying seed, and I can supply you with that. But we can also supply you with seed that we've taken from the parks. Every fall, we collect seed. I don't know how much I can supply.
Right.
But we can certainly offer you some seed for your program.
Lori Armbruster is the person that's heading up that committee. So I'll have her get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Good.
That's the one by the water plant?
No, the one I was thinking of in particular are the ones that are under power lines.
I see.
Where they're not really practical for building. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I remember that. Excellent.
I'll just grab my jump
drive. Yep, you got it. Thank you so much, Tom. It's always a pleasure to have you here. You're welcome anytime. Thank you.
Do we have a card for you, Tom? Or? Yeah. Great. Thank you.
I didn't download it. No. Tom, I didn't download that. I just put it in on your zip drive. So if potentially you could email that to me, that would be great. Oh, was it too big? Yeah, that'd be fine. I can hold on to it. Oh, I see. Okay. Or if this is going to take a minute. Okay, there it goes. Thank you. Zippity-doo-dah, right? Thank you so much. All right. Thank you. All right, so next we have our friends at AEP who are coming this evening to share some of the newest information that they have. I know that a lot of folks have been very anxious to hear from them, from some of the outages that we have had lately, so it'll be a pleasure to see what kind of upgrades that they will be doing. So you can hold for just a minute, but I will just go here. That's Renee, if you would like to go ahead and introduce your team, that would be great while I get this up for everyone.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Mayor, thank you for having us online with you this evening. I am Renee Shoemate, External Affairs Manager for AEP Ohio, and I am responsible for the oversight and implementation of local and county governmental affairs, as well as serving as AEP Ohio's primary community contact. And first, let me start by saying we know customers in this community have been extremely frustrated with their electric service, and we sincerely apologize for that inconvenience and the frustration that these outages have caused. We hear you, and we are working on it. There are several of my team members here with me on the call this evening. I'm joined by Randy Marshall. He is our region support manager overseeing the engineering and right-of-way groups at AEP Ohio. Also, I have with me Mr. Mario Sims. He is manager of distribution systems, and he's responsible for managing the construction, maintenance, and operation of the distribution system. And also, Angie Rybalt. She is our director of customer experience, and Megan Wilson, who is the customer service representative assigned to Delaware County. So tonight we are going to talk about what we are doing to improve the reliability of your electric service. And then at the end of the presentation, we will take your questions and try our very best to answer all of them. With that, I will ask Randy to start walking through the presentation, and he will now talk about the circuit that feeds the power to your home. Randy?
Thank you very much, Renee. So before we start, what I'd like to do is give a quick background. So we have two circuits that provide power to the village of Galena. And when we talk about circuits, it's simply a route of power lines and equipment that feed electricity to the homes and businesses within your community. The circuit that we're talking about here this evening, it serves about 1,700 residential and commercial customers in the Galena and Sunbury areas, and it's across about 66 or 67 miles of overhead power lines and about 37 miles of underground cable. So, you know, we understand that one outage is too many, and we've had a few outages over the past 2 years that have impacted the entire circuit, as well as numerous outages that have caused different pockets of customers to be out without power. And so we know we're not meeting your standards, nor are we meeting ours, and we have a lot more work to do. So Mario was first going to share what we've done so far to address the outages before jumping into our improvement plan that will be completed by the end of this year. So Mario?
Appreciate that, Randy. Just want to give a thanks to the village of Galena for allowing us this opportunity to come and speak on what we have done and what we plan on doing in the future to impact the reliability for this circuit, feeding your community. So I want to start off by talking about what we have done. So starting in 2020 to date, we took a deeper dive into our system and what feeds your community. By utilizing our inspection and our subject matter experts, this is what we found to increase reliability. So we identified 500 feet of underground cable that we replaced. We identified 8 poles and a variety of equipment on our infrastructures in need of repair that we did replace as well. Additionally, we targeted 1,500 trees that pose a threat to our distribution lines or power lines, and we trimmed those. Additionally, we also installed 24 smart meters to better pinpoint the issues we've run across when we do have outages across your community and our system. So once again, I understand the frustration when it comes to your service. I'm frustrated as well, but we're going to continue to do better. So on this slide, I'll speak to some of our successes and our opportunities. So as we take a closer look at the slide, what you'll see is one huge success. And this is our vegetation, our trees out of right-of-way and trees in right-of-way. So with our strategic approach, with our plan last year, we targeted those 1,500 trees. And what you see is we have not eliminated, but we have dropped down that potential of hazards when it comes to trees. So opportunities, two opportunities I'll speak on in general is our equipment failure and our animal. So what we've seen was a huge uptick when it came to animal contact and outages we're seeing across the circuit. So within, and we'll speak to it on a later slide, we'll talk to how we're going to target that problem area. So additionally, you'll see equipment failures, or excuse me, issues. We're still seeing this kind of even across the board, 20 outages last year and 20 this year. So we're going to have a targeted approach in our upcoming plan to create some better reliability to that as well. So there's another additional thing that stands out, and that's our scheduled work. So I just want to assure you, we are working efficiently as possible to try and minimize as many outages that we have to take in order for us to do our work. But with that being said, we do have opportunities where safety is involved, and we need to take outages in order to make sure our crews go home safe. So once again, we're doing our best efforts, but sometimes when safety is involved, we have to take those outages. So I just wanted to point that out.
Excuse me for a moment. I was just wondering, what kind of equipment are you talking about? Are you talking about the transformers, the underground equipment, the power boxes itself? Because I am one of the ones who's probably getting all 20 of those outages you had in the last year. I moved in last July, and I'm looking four houses down to somebody who has a Sunbury address and has not had a single outage. So most of us in our neighborhood, I would say 75% of us now own generators because our power is out anywhere from 3 hours to 24 to 48 hours once a month at least. So I'm wondering what this equipment issue is because it's not the rain or if there's no storms going on during these equipment outages. When you explain equipment outages, what is it?
So there's a variety when it comes to equipment outages, and you won't necessarily see all of these outages, which we see displayed on this screen. So when we talk and we group them together as equipment, this could be, I don't want to get too in the weeds when it comes to terminology, but it could be our cables, our power lines, our supported infrastructures. It could be a variety of that when we're having these outages. What I would like to do, if you could please share your information with Renee so we can get and dig deeper into your premise and see what all outages you're seeing and maybe there's something we can direct.
We're a new subdivision, and most of them, I was in a new subdivision before, and most of them were not an issue of, like, I know I had before, like, when they're working on another house, sometimes it would go off a little bit, but that is not the issue. They're after hours at night, you know, for days. So.
Okay.
It shouldn't be any of the underground stuff because we're new, and these should be all new, not all new equipment underground.
Okay. So is that possible? So I want to dig into this deeper. Could you share your information with Renee?
I live in the Galena Retreat. I live in the Galena Retreat right there off on Fescue, right next to Sunbury Meadows.
So let me cut in here quickly. So we there at the end of the presentation, which we would like to get through first, I will provide a website where you can send those questions directly to myself and Megan. But once we get through the presentation, we will go back and try to answer your questions. But if not, you can submit them either directly to me via email, and the mayor has my email address, or you can submit them to the website that we will give you the information for at the end.
Thank you, everybody. We know this is a pretty hot topic tonight, so we've invited them here to try to get through their presentation, and then at the end we'll have an opportunity for some of your great questions that I know a lot of people have. And then I've been keeping in close touch with Renee. She's been very responsive in trying to answer as many questions as possible and certainly understands the frustration. So thank you so much. And if you can just write those down as they come to you, and then we'll address those at the end, that'd be great. Thank you.
And while we said we only get bogged down in the weeds of all this, as far as you explaining to us exactly what's being fixed and how it's being fixed, the bottom line is this. We pay you guys to deliver power, and it's not happening. So whether or not we bog down in this or not, the simple fact is this one person we heard from, there are hundreds of people like that, hundreds. So for you to say, hey, go to the website, we have a lot of people, and it's not just in Galena, it's in other areas as well where we're being underserved by the folks we're talking to right now. So well, we do appreciate you guys coming on. We really do. You guys coming on and explaining what you're doing. And I love the time frame by the end of the year. Fantastic. We're excited about that, to see these improvements. And so we do appreciate you guys being here. But no, there are a bunch of people that are really unhappy right now with how the power is being delivered to our houses. If anything, it's spurred us on to find other ways. What is solar? How do we go about getting batteries? What do we do with generators? Like, it's made us work to be creative, because we know there's another power outage coming and it's going to be inevitable. So that's what we're trying to find out. Like, how can we start to look forward to a time where we have less peace?
Absolutely. Once again, I hear concern. I hear frustration. You know, as we talked about before, we understand there's 1,700 plus customers, residential or commercial, on this circuit. Reliability is a concern. It's a concern for myself, and we're going to keep on pushing to produce what the service that you're wanting. So if we jump into the next slide, I'll speak more on what we're going to do moving forward. It's a really good segue into our additional plan. So this is how we get better. Some break this down into four steps. This is our next strategic approach when it comes to providing you with that reliable service. So phase one was the planning and producing an improvement plan, which includes adding additional protective equipment to minimize that outage if we do have an outage. Reestablishing the path of electric circuit. So I'll pause right there. I'm sure you're asking, you know, what are you talking about? What does that mean? So what we're doing is optimizing the flow of electricity and the way it gets feed, mitigating the risk of unnecessary exposure. So I look at this, you know, if you're at the front of the line, we're trying to find avenues where we can put you at the front of the line to give you less exposure to other additional hazards from our system, or such things as Mother Nature. We'll be replacing some of our aging infrastructure. And lastly, that uptick we've seen in animal contact, we're going to be animal guarding to help prevent animal contact from disrupting your service. So that was phase one. So what you'll see is phase two. This actually was completed today. And this is the design phase. This is where the plan is in action and coming out some of the final details, such as pole sizing, location, and what size equipment we need is put on paper. So then we go into phase three. This is what you'll see upcoming in the next couple of weeks, or I guess I'd say you probably won't see it, but this is what we'll be working on. So this is getting our groups to start scheduling this work. They're going to start ordering material, getting the crews and the resources needed so we can have them out there to complete this improvement plan for your area. And then phase four, this is going to be my favorite, and hopefully this is yours. This is when you start seeing our employees in the field. So, once again, this will take place within the next few weeks. We'll be out there, boots in the field, you know, executing this plan, helping produce reliability to the circuit. So with this, that plan, we're seeing it projected to be completed by the end of the year. And additionally, what I want to add to that is, you know, as we're out there doing that work, just remember, you know, if we do run across safety concerns, you know, we may have to take the power out. We're going to try our best to communicate that before we have to. But for the safety of our employees and make sure they go home, we may have to take outages. So I just wanted to lay that out. So what you'll see, and I didn't talk to you on this plan, four steps, is our ongoing. So what we're doing is our engineers are exploring any additional areas for improvement for your electric service. And what we'll do, we'll keep you informed, and we're committed to keeping you informed on a monthly basis of what you can expect next. We're confident this will resolve some of your issues, but we will continue to need to adjust based on impacts that are uncontrollable forces such as Mother Nature, weather, animals, vehicle accidents, et cetera. But we will stay on these issues and address it as the service improves. And real time, you know, if you have an outage today, we're looking into that data to make sure if there is any other opportunities or areas we need to look at, we'll make sure we're continuing to get that in the plan. And that's ongoing. That's not going to stop till we get that reliable service that you deserve. So with that, I'll pass it off to Renee.
So as we work to implement the plans and actions that Mario has just outlined to improve your service, I do want to reiterate, and he has just said it as well, that while we work, there is the possibility that some customers may experience an outage. And while crews are completing this work, our equipment will be set to a more sensitive setting to ensure their safety. But be assured that our field personnel will work to get your power back on as quickly and as safely as they can. In addition to this, we may also need to have planned outages to implement this work. And in this case, we will communicate this to customers through the information on file with us on their account. So I encourage everyone, and I'm not sure how we can get this message out to all of the residents, but I encourage everyone to please take a look at your contact information at aepohio.com/account. And the phone number in there is where we would direct an automated call. And lastly, to stay up to date as we work as fast as possible to improve your service, we encourage you to visit aepohio.com/Galena for the latest information, or you can also email us, and either myself or Megan will pick this up, at Galena. The email address is galena@aep.com with any questions. And Mayor, I will send all of this information back to you. And as Mario stated, I will be updating you, Mayor, with all of our progress on a monthly basis. I'll probably send it to you in an email, but I'm also happy to speak with you at any time. So this concludes our formal presentation, and at this time, we are open to taking questions that you have.
Hey, Renee, real quick, this is Jill. The email and the, the website information is great. Do you have any capabilities of having, like, a ticker for your phone? Like, I'll get alerts, you know, for various things. Do you have any system that, you know, you can get alerts that says, hey, power outage in this vicinity, or, you know, it's affecting you?
Yes.
Or you have one coming, or we're going to have to turn it off, or, you know, whatever is going on.
There is. Can somebody, Megan or Randy, do you happen to know details on that?
Yeah, you'd actually have to go to aepohio.com, and it actually, there's a, I don't know the actual location, but there is a part of the site where you can get outages for, you know, your location, and it has an outage map and lays out exactly where those outages are occurring, and it also provides information on what's the estimated time of restoration, as well as kind of detailing, I believe, the number of customers that is out. I think ultimately we could provide that information, but there's definitely something on our website that can give you that information real time.
Yeah, I'm not sure you get that. That gets passed around on our HOAs and things like that. But I'm just wondering if on our individual phones that, you know, just like I get alerts where I get Amber alerts and I get an AEP alert.
Yes, you can get the local alerts, and I will send you the detail on how to do that.
Excellent.
Hi, this is Ruben, and I've been in this community for 14 years, and I am so grateful for your partnership tonight. I think this is much needed. And I believe that this is a great opportunity to begin to build confidence and trust, because right now it's at a deficit. So I love what's happening and what you're planning to do by the end of the year. But I will say this, at the end of the year, if they're still experiencing these types of outages, because your presentation is great, it's beautiful, I love you that you all are here, but the residents need proof. And I'm hoping that is what happened, because if it continues to happen, I think most of us will start sending you our grocery bills.
So, looking at that, I appreciate the partnership, us being able to join and speak on our path of reliability for the village of Galena. You know, as we progress through this year, as Renee mentioned, you know, us providing updates, you know, ourselves, we're going to be looking to see, you know, did what we do work? And if it's not working, then we need to go back to the drawing board and figure something else out. So that's when we're going to continue to engage our engineering group and, you know, our subject matter experts. And when I say that, I mean the guys and the gals, the crew that are in the field doing the work to figure out, you know, what are the problems we can prevent before they happen. So this is an ending. You know, after this year, this will continue until we correct this path.
This is Randy Marshall. Just to add on to that, one of the things to take into consideration as we kind of look at that outage history, where Mario had shown the graph, the situation you have is you have an improvement in one thing and an uptick in another. What we're working to do is we're working to pull that information and see where the majority of those outages are occurring. And he said that the two most prevalent ones at this point in time are the equipment issues as well as the animal contact. So right now those are two of the biggest things that we're ultimately addressing. And in addition to that, I think the most important part of that Mario said is that continuous improvement. So we have these issues that we see, but we also know that there may be some aging infrastructure as well as some things that we can do additionally to kind of partition the circuit up so that when one group sees an outage, not everybody would see it. And so that's where I think you'll see the engineering group doing that work in the background to ensure that, hey, we're following this plan, but there's other stuff that we're doing on top of that to improve that reliability.
This is Kathy Cooper. I know for us, we've had over 20 outages in each of those a year. And for us, the appliances. You shouldn't have a microwave that's a couple of years old and they're getting blown out. You shouldn't have refrigerators getting blown out. And I hear it just constantly through the neighborhood. I second that I would say at least a third of our neighborhood has now, along with us, gone out and bought generators. Mm-hmm. One thing that I hear from the residents is, if you have a scheduled outage, do what you can to let us know ahead of time. We had an outage last week, and I got the notification on my phone that you have an outage, but I had power. And within 5 minutes, I had an outage. So that made me feel like you knew what you were doing and it was something being done in the background. So if you could notify the residents, and I do have the cell number set up, as far in advance as possible, that would be helpful.
I would second that as well, Mike Fry. Thank you again for all of you being here. I know it's hard to face the fire on something like this. Maybe you guys could share your tactics with Spectrum, and they could make themselves available to us as well. I think with the pandemic and everything, a lot more people are at home. I've talked to several of my friends who work for different cable companies, and they tell us about how weak the grid is up here. And I imagine that's what you mean when you refer to infrastructure. So I guess one is the second, you know, Kathy's concern is we need 2 days, 7 days, whatever is possible, but certainly not hours, when there's a planned outage, because people have to work. And I know several people have had to, they've had to quit their work day for a whole day because they didn't have the time to go to the office or to make other arrangements. So I think that since the pandemic put us in this situation and our grid is weaker, I think we have to go above and beyond on the customer service side to allow people enough time who pay the bills monthly dutifully to be able to say, at least I can make another arrangement. And second, when you talk about infrastructure, I may be a little bit uneducated on this issue. I'm not sure, if government has to get involved or, like the federal government or if this is an AEP thing, but how do we target the infrastructure? Because to me, it feels like these are Band-Aids. It sounds that way, and I could be wrong, but it feels like until we deal with the infrastructure, we're going to continue to have these outages. And I feel like eventually we're going to end up there and we're going to say, we got to put some money into this. Why not start with that more on the front end if that is the case? Thank you.
So I'll take that. 100% I agree and I understand. As we talk about our infrastructure and opportunities for us to get better, this is where our engineering group is coming in and targeting where can we get better. If we've just put a pole in the ground, we don't want to replace that pole just because the pole next to it is old or so forth. This is where our engineering group, they really dig deep and figure out what's our best bang for our buck. And when I say bang for our buck, what's going to improve reliability as well.
That's why we've been falling to the back of the line. When you say bang for your buck, we're a smaller area. We don't have as many residents. And so there are other areas around us that seem to not have the same kind of outages we do. So it's that whole bang for your buck thing that I would push back against. That's, I think, why we've been too often at the back of the line. And while I appreciate you guys saying now we're moving to the head of the line, I think it's that bang for the buck mentality. I get it. We don't have as many residents. In the end, we're still residents that are paying for power that we're not getting consistently. We walked into Columbus Crew Stadium, and I saw that big sign, AEP, American Electric Power. I saw the big sign right over the top of it. And it immediately made me think of how disappointed I have been in the service we received from you guys. It's a brand problem. It's a problem with what we're getting from you guys right now. I know you guys have a partnership down there with the stadium, but it's one of those things where, like, this is a problem. And even though we're a small group of people, we're still a group of people that matter.
100%. And let me go back and reiterate, what I mean by best bang for a buck. So this is not comparing the village of Galena to a Sunbury, Columbus, Bexley, or anything like that. This is not a comparison of, hey, I want to put my resources somewhere else. It is, what do you need? How do I get it to you? And how do I do it? So, yes, I could say I want to do X, Y, and Z, but does X, Y, and Z make sense?
And I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, are you aware of the development that's coming in this area potentially, and what we're looking at over the next 10 years? Are those conversations that you have, knowing that the expansiveness of a particular area, you know, we're not the only ones growing, but, you know, but exactly what's happening here, because obviously people are very concerned. If you can't take care of what's here now, how are you going to take care of what's coming?
Yeah, and I want to speak to that, because that's kind of what I was going to say in terms of, you know, looking at what's taking place now. I do admit, I don't think there was as much attention that should have been there. I guess here's my thing in terms of providing us information regarding, you know, whether it's new subdivisions, new commercial and industrial customers, that's important if there's somehow we can get that information on the front end, because ultimately what will happen is we do a lot of our planning based on that projected growth. So it is important if we can have, you know, access to that information when it comes to like a new subdivision, a new, you know, big business that may be coming into the area, so that we can start looking to say, hey, what do we need to do based on that new growth that's coming?
100%. That will absolutely happen. And Renee, maybe you and I can set up a time later this week to sit down and talk about the projections of what are coming in the area, so you're real clear on that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Is there anybody out in the audience that has any questions? Jill, I think you were talking before. Is that correct? The communities at Galena?
I was just saying our community, we're out monthly. So I don't know what, it's all new, you know, equipment there. So I'm wondering, like, how many transformers do you have in this area, you know, that's going on that's making us have these power outages. And apparently we're not on the Sunbury Transformer, because they all have power every time we don't have power. I mean, it's really hard to sit there and look four houses down and they're having this nice, their house is lit up while everybody else on the other side isn't. So I guess how many transformers are in this area for us, and how many are you going to put in with the growth to know that this is going to get better?
To help clarify, she's kind of, if you think of where Galena is and where Sunbury is, she's kind of right in the middle, and that is a new section for Galena, as well as a new section for Sunbury. And so those areas have joined up, and it is really our newest areas that encompass several hundred homes. And so I have heard, maybe I'm wrong, that there is kind of a division there in terms of the grid that kind of takes care of Sunbury and a grid that kind of takes care of Galena. You're happy to correct me if I'm incorrect.
Well, it's definitely that, because literally in the backyard is the Sunbury Christian Church, and they have power. And literally four houses down, the Sunbury addresses all have power, but no one on the Galena side. So it's a dead stop from Sunbury to Galena. So we have to be on different grids.
Hey, Jill, this is Randy. I think it's important if we do get your contact information, address, because that's going to help us understand what's, you know, happening specifically at what we call your premise. Because when you talk about transformers, there's technically, you know, a number of transformers throughout, and most likely you're only going to be getting served, say it's loosely, being served by that one. So what I'd really like to understand is, hey, what is this area that you live in? And just get an understanding of what outages you're seeing. So it's important to get your address so that we can look at that area a little bit closer and understand what's impacting you. Because
it's monthly, couple of months, at least more than a month, maybe twice a month. I think the least amount of outages we've ever had is like 3 hours. The most we had was like, what was it, 36 hours.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, we had set up by an electrician. We just moved in July. We had an electrician come in and set up a whole house generator for us now, because we're losing groceries, we're everything, you know. I need to go to work. I work at a hospital. I
you know, I don't have a choice with the COVID in there. I have to go into work. I can't sit at home. So, I mean, there's no one to run those generators when we're there. And we are both, my husband and I are both essential workers. So we lose our food because we have to go into work because of a service that I didn't think that we'd ever have an issue with before. Now we do, since we've moved here.
Yeah.
Definitely agree. Could you please, we need to address, you know, communities are one thing, and address is everything for us when it comes to issues we're seeing. Because what one might see, as we spoke to before, everyone else is not going to see that. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. So if we could, please, I appreciate and I hear the frustration. Please share that information with Renee via email. That way we can start pinpointing this and getting this fixed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a joke, the hum of generators through the air. People post, you know, there's a whole site, Facebook website on this.
Yep.
That's absolutely.
You're welcome to send me your address so I can check it out and pass it on to Renee, because I know it's not just you. It's, you know, your whole area. So, Renee, that will be part of what we discuss, you know, this week as well. Anyone else? Thank you, Jill, very much for speaking up.
No problem.
All right. Well, great. Well, if anybody has any concerns or things that they think of later, please feel free to email me. I will be talking with Renee on a regular basis, and, you know, I think it would be a great idea to have you guys come back, you know, quarterly for sure, every couple months, you know, especially it sounds like things are going to be up and running and we're going to start seeing some progress. So as you can hear, communication is huge. You can really forego a lot of complaints if people just know it's coming and they know that it's a planned outing, because just not knowing is very, very frustrating. So it is true. There is a lot of discussion about this for sure on the sites, and I am sure that you are as anxious as we are to get this fixed. So thank you for being with us tonight, and we'll continue to work together on this and look forward to improvements.
Yeah. Thank you. I sent it to you already.
Oh, great. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks. No problem.
Great.
Mayor, just one thing. With as much activity as they plan on taking place from September to end of the year, maybe every other month
yeah.
we have someone to meet you. Yeah.
Sounds good. Yep.
Would love to have you guys back and tell you how great a job you're doing. Would love to see you again.
Yeah. That'd be great. We'll get some dates on the books there, Renee, and kind of keep
okay.
it rolling. All right. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. All right. With that being said, I think we will move on to the administrator's report. Jeff, in the essence of time this evening for you and I both, and if we want to keep our things pretty bullet pointed this evening and just kind of mention kind of the three top highlights would be great.
Yes, okay. My report's 6 pages long. I'll hit the things that I need for council to decide about.
Perfect.
On page 2, I'm giving an update about that Walnut Creek Trail Bridge. We're at a point where we need to have it analyzed by a structural engineer to determine specifically what's wrong with it, what needs to be fixed, and how much it will cost. And KEM, our village engineer, has given me an estimate of $10,000 for that study. We believe we could fit that in this year's budget, but there might be some other things that have to go by the wayside for the time being.
How do we justify $10,000 for a study? I don't know the answer, but $10,000 for a study, and maybe we make it to where it's permanently not motorized vehicles, and so it's just pedestrian and bike. If some whatever repairs we do won't be as massive. How do you justify $10,000 to study it? I can't do it.
I think we need to let him finish the report before we attack that one aspect of it.
No, I'm
not accusing you of attacking, but let him finish his report because there's more parts to that Walnut Creek Trail than just the bridge.
When I read it all, I'm aware.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that too.
Mm-hmm. So $10,000 is what KDM estimates that they will be able to do that engineering analysis. I don't feel I'm in a position to be able to say that that's too high or too low. It is a lot of money, I grant you that, but it's by a professional structural engineer. But we need that analysis in order to know what it is that we have to fix and how much that will cost to fix it. I included in my report that there is a grant through Preservation Parks that has an application deadline for next year's construction of October 1st of this year. That grant has $100,000 for the entire county. So I would be surprised if we would get the whole $100,000 for our construction. But if council wishes for me to proceed on the grant application to be prepared and submitted, then I'll need your permission to do that. Now, also in conjunction with the Walnut Creek Trail, there's a long-standing problem with groundwater seepage onto the trail, and that's impacting the pavement of the trail. And so I asked KDM for some kind of a cost estimate for that. And you can see the dollar figures there to just analyze it and figure out what the issue is and how to fix it. A conceptual plan is $2,000. And then if we decide to have them move on with design and construction documents, that's $6,000. So a total of $8,000. Or if we'd want them to skip right to preparing some kind of engineering design and construction, that'd be $7,000. And at this point, we have no idea to know how much construction would cost for the drainage improvements. And that might be a reason to go with the conceptual plan first so we get a construction cost estimate out of that. So those are two big things having to do with the Walnut Creek Trail entailing a lot of money. And I don't know how to advise you other than if we want the trail to still be open a few years from now, then it looks to me like we'll have to proceed with engineering.
Are they the only ones that we can get to assess us, to assess it for us, to do that, this evaluation? Are there other companies that may be less expensive, perhaps?
Perhaps. We have a village engineer by contract. It doesn't, I don't believe, prohibit us from hiring somebody else. We'd have to put out some kind of advertisement for proposals and that sort of thing. All time sensitive. And so it just puts things off months and months. But we could do that.
I think it'd be worth our due diligence to find out if there's others that could provide the same service. Cheaper because it is a problem. I think that we need to address the problem, address it properly. But just to go to do it, to spend that amount of money and not know who else to provide the service that's cheaper, I think that would behoove us to be good stewards of managing this problem.
You know, none of this sounds outrageous to me. I don't get why $10,000 to study a bridge is a lot of money. I mean, you got to know what's wrong, got to figure out how to fix it. I mean, that it just isn't, I don't see, oh my God, $10,000. That's not a lot of money.
It may not be a lot of money.
But to me, the important thing here is the trail and keeping the trail maintenance open. I mean, the bridge has been restricted to foot traffic. Let it stay that way. But to me, the high priority is the water flooding the pavement. I mean, that's a long-range issue that we need to address. And again, $2,000 to figure that out, that's nothing.
No, I don't think that's the issue, Dave, instead of $2,000.
I mean, you've got an arrangement with an engineering firm that you work with all the time. These guys are out doing inspections for you. Why do you want to undercut that relationship?
Well, when you have a budget that's very limited, then I think it requires us to ask questions.
So let's say, let's don't do the bridge. Let's do the trail. He's given us two options. Let's set a priority and say, let's work on the trail.
Indeed, Dave, you're right. $10,000 isn't a great sum of money these days, except when we go to look at our budget and say, where are we going to get $10,000?
That's why I'm saying prioritize.
And I agree, because our neighborhood website is the one that got going again on this corner where it's flooded. That is a hazard. That is a health hazard. That is coming off of that bridge, and we've already had one fellow wipe out in that gravel and mud. That, to me, would be number one priority as well.
Can you agree?
What's the... So there's groundwater that's washing over the trail, and I heard you say it's going to be a problem in a few years, perhaps. So is this a here and now thing? And because now that we've talked about it, walking down the trail, it washes out. How now it seems to be on our radar. So as far as liability and things like that, I wonder is it a problem that we're addressing in advance, perhaps? Too far in advance, and we know it's going to be a problem, or is it actually eroding right now?
This groundwater seepage, by the way, is not just that curve. It's basically the whole section from Harrison Street over to the our sanitary lift station.
This is a long run.
Yeah, I have photographs in my report of these two different areas, but. If you go down the trail, there are places where the pavement is heaved up. And at first impression, you'd think it's tree roots, but in several of these locations, these points of upheaval are not near any large trees.
Okay. Is the grant specifically for anything, repairs within like these areas? Is it possible that the grant could pay for some of this for the bridge?
The Delaware County Preservation Parks Grant has to do with anything having to do with trail development or maintenance,
okay,
which is different from a lot of the ones, like state DNR grant where we were able to build the trails. They don't have money for maintenance.
Okay.
And that's going to be a problem.
I would say I don't think it's a bad idea to chase down the grant. I think that's let's grab free money and we can grab it. But at the same time, if we build into, because if we do say whether it be $10,000 or $2,000 or $6,000 or whatever it is for evaluating what's needed, what's behind that is a whole bunch more money in repair, and that I'm certain we don't have budget this year.
Yeah.
This feels like as we look toward next year's budget, perhaps something that we can say, let's expand in this area, knowing that we have some more trail maintenance. Look at it in 2022, that kind of thing, as far as upkeep. If we can still keep the trail in the way it's looking right now, we don't have to, because I also heard you say we might have to cut in other areas. And right now, I know we don't have a lot of areas where we can cut. You know, we just don't. So if that's something we can look at for next year's budget, perhaps that, and I'm not saying kick the can. Sometimes we got to do it right here and now. If we chase down the grant, maybe that comes through $10,000 or so. That gets us closer toward evaluating what we need, and then we can look at a bigger chunk of that next year's budget.
And we'll also be starting budget process very soon. So, you know,
it's not as far away as it
is. Plus, we're going into winter, so not to say that the trails aren't used during that time, but it does buy us a little bit of time.
Yeah, is that grant for 22? If it's approved, is that for next year?
Mm-hmm. This deadline of October 1st is for next year's construction money.
Okay.
Like I said, we don't know how expensive these problems are to actually construct until we have an engineer evaluate it and come up with a game plan. The I mentioned the grant under the bridge because KEM said they could do this engineering analysis in the next month. Before October, I didn't ask him specifically how soon he'd be able to come up with this conceptual plan for the groundwater seepage. I don't know. That's it. An unknown, I didn't ask that question.
Jeff, just for clarification, I'm kind of hearing a couple of things. I'm not sure everybody's delineating those two separately, right, or together. And so if you can help clarify, if we were to get this grant or apply for the grant, can we encompass both of those projects in that one grant, or is it for one or the other? Can we do the bridge and the trail, or trail only?
Potentially, it could be both. However, $100,000 for the whole county, I'd be surprised if we're going to get.
No, I am completely understand. But if we even had 10,000 of it or something to that effect, I mean, we know how that rolls with grants. They've got to spread it out. I'm just saying, in general, would these two projects be encompassed in that one grant if possible?
Well, it might be that we would have, since we won't, if we're going to hold off on the engineering analysis of the bridge, and we won't know how much to ask for.
Right.
That's the whole thing. You have to know how much you're applying for.
Yeah.
And there's always next year, hopefully, for another grant application.
Right. Okay.
The question is, can we get the concept plan completed if we wanted to by October 1st?
Mm-hmm. I didn't ask Mark that question.
If that's our priority, you know, the groundwater, and it's $2,000, maybe that's something we shoot for, you know, if they can do it. I don't know if everyone agrees with that, or I think that's what I was hearing, the priorities.
I think that's a good place to start, Todd, is get everybody's consensus on that. If that's a project that you want to make the priority, and then if so.
I mean, they're obviously both priorities, but we have to.
It's the bigger of the two right now.
We have the September council meeting where we could be prepared with a resolution to,
if they can make,
proceed
that timeline,
with applying, and by then I would know what the timeline is. That $2,000 perhaps is within my ability to just go ahead and have that done if it's something that sounds like they knock that one out pretty quickly.
That sounds like a widespread. I mean, you looking at the picture, you can tell it's a big area. And
yeah, the construction could be quite involved.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's push everybody's in agreement to move forward with the trail piece, and then see if KEM can get that done in a timely manner to us to then apply for the grant for that, for trail maintenance.
For the drainage part, right. And then, you know, we could look forward to budgeting the engineering study for the bridge in 2022.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Lots of heads nodding in the right direction on that one. So, okay.
Okay.
So, Jeff, you don't believe the water that's on the corner here has anything to do with the lift station that's right there?
No, it's
so
the...
You've always said that it was the lift station that's sitting right there.
Yeah, it's the groundwater hydrology. Shale, bedrock, and when we tried to excavate in there to solve the problem a year and a half ago, you could just see the water just streaming out through the bed of shale. And it's just a constant seepage problem, and we've tried different things, and I've asked different experts, including our village engineer and contractors, and everybody seems to have a different idea on what could be done, which is problematic because we're trying to just get to a solution. And we could go on for years trying different things.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to skip forward here. I said in here that I had put in a list to try to take advantage of a $250 million program that the state has for improving water and wastewater systems around the state, and I put in three project ideas, and none of them ended up on the list, which I haven't been able to look into that to see why not, because these are all good projects, I believe.
Is this for the Ohio Department of Development?
Yes, it's called the Ohio Water and Wastewater Infrastructure Grant Program.
ODOG. So I spoke to Tom Marshall about that, and Tom's very excited about exploring something. Did you happen to talk with him about that?
No, we didn't have time. The county sent an email and said we had until, I think it was Friday a week ago, it was just within a few days, they wanted a list.
Yeah.
So we just sent a list, but I conferred with our plant operator, Dale, and Mark Rufner, and we came up with dollar figures for these projects. And then the county issued their short list for Delaware County, and Galena was not even mentioned.
Okay.
Our Walnut Street Culvert project will go under construction sometime during September, which, is the next 30 days, basically. Joe Walker Road paving project, the county's contractor is way behind schedule. I believe originally we were told it was presumed to be mid-summer when they were going to do it, and here it's going to be potentially October. I wanted to get the conversation going about the Harrison Street pavement, Walnut Street to Home Street. It's deteriorating pretty badly. There's different types of deficiencies. Merely milling and filling is not going to take care of all of that. There's some places where the pavement is bad all the way down to the base. So I had our village engineer come up with an estimate, and $250,000, basically, $226,650. That includes design and construction. Potentially, this is the type of project that we could get a grant from the Ohio Public Works Commission. And in our application, we would need to indicate what our village's match will be. And if we put in just 26%, that'd be nearly $59,000. But we have several projects that are not yet completed that affect our street fund, and we don't really know whether we're going to have $59,000 available for our match. However, we could go ahead and apply for the OPWC grant. The deadline for next year's construction money is November 5th of this year. And if we apply and then it turns out we don't have that matching money, then we could end up just not accepting the grant if we were awarded the money. That could, however, be a ding on future applications we might have, because we applied for money and then didn't follow through.
25%, is that like a standard?
26% is kind of a general minimum. Yeah. The more you pony up and put in, the higher you score on these competitive grants. It's a lot of money, but the road, I'm having an updated traffic study done by the county sheriff. I found some data from 2015, and there's about 1,100 vehicles per day using this stretch of Harrison Street. It's a busy road. And so that's why I wanted to get us to start focusing on that, because the road's not going to get in any better condition. But here's another situation where if council would like to proceed with us applying for this OPWC grant, then there would be a resolution that would need to be enacted. We don't have the resolution prepared but
is that something that you all want to think about? Because I know a lot of times we talk about these things, we leave, and then we have no conclusion.
Right.
So is this something that you would want Jeff to prepare legislation for, or Ken, and present at the next meeting?
First grant was October 1st, and then the next one's November 5th. So that next is the next meeting, we could prepare something. So go ahead and
I
think in light of the other one, the only question I have is, it sounds like we have a lot going on. It's an awful lot of money, you know, and this water issue on the trail does concern me. And the question is, can the road wait a year? Or is this something we do in 2023? Or what can wait? What can we put off? Because it sounds like doing all of this at once next year doesn't sound like feasible.
Generally, roads and trails are two different
budget
parts of the budget.
Sure.
And the sources of the money are different.
Okay.
You were also talking about Homestead. Yes, on the next page, I brought up about Home Street, which is another busy street, and I'm going to have a traffic study done on that where they'll get the weekly traffic. But it's a substandard road as far as the width. It's basically, I think, probably in early history, an alley that's become a road. It's like 1.5 lanes wide.
High Street's like a 1.25.
So Home Street, ultimately, someday it would be good to upgrade the corridor with curbs and gutters and a sidewalk and so forth. Yeah. But meanwhile, the pavement's crumbling. There's vegetation growing through the cracks. We see a patchwork of pothole patching from previous years, and there are a couple places I'm hoping to have done yet this year, but the road's basically in really poor condition. And so Mark Rufner, our village engineer, said a basic mill and fill pavement repair, rough estimate is $130,000, and that includes engineering and construction, and it would not change the road width or anything like that. It's just dealing with the existing road and so forth. But that's another big high ticket project.
Have we ever had discussions with commissioners regarding the street fund? Because I know that we're given a certain amount of money, and that's, we're stuck with that amount of money. So with that being said, would it help for us to have some further conversations with the commissioners in terms of budget allocation for our street fund, because it seems that we're always extremely low? And just to confirm, am I going in the right direction with that?
Most of that comes from taxes. Right. So the tax dollars from gasoline tax, registration tax.
And it's kind of prorated based on our population, is that correct? I mean, how do they come up with our street fund number?
Registration is based on how many people from the village buy their registration or title or whatever, because I audit those every year.
That's car license plates you're talking about.
I'm just wondering if we have further conversations and share with them our challenges, that and they know that what our growth is. And you know, we have really, really good relationships right now with the commissioners, that if we had an opportunity to talk to them, I'd be happy to do that and see if there was any way or something that we're missing, you know, that needs to come out of that street fund, because you're talking some really big dollars with some very high priority projects.
And also, I mean, with all the planned development and what we're projecting over the next for growth, Harrison and Holmes are huge, because a lot of people come to the village.
Mm-hmm.
And those should be the two roads that people use, along with Walnut.
you know, and then the other side streets obviously can wait, you know, but I would say Holmes especially, because it is a commercial street, should be wider.
Right.
So if we do go for it, I think we go for it, honestly.
I'm trying to figure out how we can
down the road, yeah. You know,
that
more so.
The Holmes Street Corridor project by the $1 or $2 million, we could probably end up wiping out a couple residences. Is the right that some of them are right up to what the right of way is, and you need to widen the road.
Yeah.
The part about talking to commissioners, it never hurts to talk, but I would be surprised if they really care about what's going on in the village. But talking to them,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not sure. An issue of whether they care. It's based on a formula.
Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there any leeway? I'm just wondering. I mean, there is that formula, but I'm just wondering if they better understand our challenges, could they potentially direct us into some other funding sources that we're not aware of? I don't know. I don't have that answer. But it's certainly worth, I mean, when I talked to Chris Balzerman about widening the bridge and doing some things, you know, I'm trying to have some of those conversations, you know, for Balderson and infrastructure, he's on the infrastructure committee for the state. And, you know, these types of things, I want to keep putting this out there so that they know our needs, because they've been very responsive, you know, thus far and having conversations.
You're right, David. I didn't mean to use the word they don't care. It was my way of saying they probably don't have much latitude here. The county doesn't have a lot of excess money around, and there's from my years at ODOT, I can tell you there's never enough money to take care of all the infrastructure needs.
Why don't we just invite one of them over? We did, somebody came out here, what, 6 months ago? I forget which commissioner it was. Invite them all out again.
That was actually
that was over a year ago.
I saw Gary the other night at BCRP, but, you know, I'll give them a call tomorrow and just see, and I'll talk to Troy Balderson and Rick Carfagna and those guys who are sitting on the infrastructure, because obviously there's a huge bump that we just got in the infrastructure funding federally, and that's going to start moving down. So, you know, I think that we need to start being a little more vocal about our cause and our village here and our roads and where that's going. So at least starting a conversation, whether it does anything, at least we'll know what we don't know. You know?
Actually, I think that's probably the right tactic, is to point to the federal funds that are coming in, and we want to get them off.
I think also, I mean, consider when we talk about widening roads and, you know, I think there's something kind of nice about the narrow road. I think there, that quaint feel of the village every time we widen and add. I think we're it does. And there's lots of traffic through there, and we're making it even easier for more traffic through there. Or do we say, no, it's a pretty narrow road, and that's just the way it is in our village. So it's keep that high level elevation view as far as the way we keep, because I hear that from everyone, keep it the way it is and keep it small and quaint and great and perfect. So
Eric, you're on to a good point.
So, yeah.
Because I've been involved in a lot of historic bridge projects, and having a narrow bridge on a neighborhood street is actually seen as a good thing, because traffic slows down
faster.
It's like having a speed bump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just a thought, as we think about how much traffic we can push through, maybe we think about how much traffic we want to push through.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are just to maintain, so, you know, that's upkeep, yeah.
Like the entrances and stuff like that, curbs.
Yeah.
Get around that FedEx truck.
By the way,
wait for him to go the other way.
I think, Mike, you mentioned about the, or maybe Eric, the correlation between new development and additional traffic. And that is one of the functions of our NCA, is we'll be generating revenue for these off-site improvements. Okay. So that in my report was to raise awareness about another busy street that's got a crumbling pavement. And there gets to be a point where you really can't cover it over. It's, when it's all alligator cracking like that, it's failed, the pavement's failed all the way down to the base. Columbia Gas, they've finished the pipeline part, so now we're waiting for them to come and restore our pavement, and that's on Walnut Street and then a little bit on High Street, and they believe this paving will occur in October. Okay, that probably are the hardest hitting items on my report.
I just have one question, Jeff. You have upper trails that you're going to do steel coating?
Yes.
What price tag did that come in at?
It's under $10,000. And the...
Can you get the other estimate?
Yeah, the contractor I picked had the lowest price per square yard.
You had two estimates on that?
I had three or four, maybe. The one that you had recommended that I get a quote from was higher per yard than this particular contract.
And that's fine. You made a comparison. You made your decision.
So then the sealer is, you know, it's the black stuff, but like you put on driveways, basically, but a commercial grade, but it's water-based. So it takes a while to dry, and depending on, like, a part of our trail is shady, so it could take longer to dry, and so we'll be inconveniencing trail users. We'll have signs out and some cones, but there could be a few days, depending on how long it takes for the stuff to dry. And the contractor may be able to break this up into different segments and just do it. They have to look for a weather window when the pavement is dry and then when it should be dry weather for the next few days after that.
So you say it goes from Dustin up to Sunbury. Is there a reason why the trail at Walnut Creek is not included?
Because of the none of the contractors recommended it because we had the wet pavement situation and all the moss that's growing on the pavement.
That's
so,
about 10% of the path, though.
Yeah.
There's all the rest of the path.
Yeah. So I focused on the good trail and the trail that has the least problems. The Walnut Creek one, though, everybody said, oh, the moss on the pavement's a big problem, and you have to take care of the seepage before we can go.
So on the one end that you're talking about. You're only talking the one end.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We'll move on.
I've got two comments. I appreciate, and I'm sure everybody else does, the effort you're making to take photographs of various projects and events. Because that really enhances our ability to make a review. And then secondly, I really like the idea of the arborist, hiring an arborist to evaluate trees along the trail. But I think we might want to consider larger right-of-way issues for the village in terms of when you talk to the arborist, like the sycamore that fell at Ruffner Park. I mean, that's in village right-of-way, so we could have anticipated that perhaps if we had a certified archivist or arborist taking a look at these things. So it's not just on the trails, is my point.
Oh, right. We generally went around, and there aren't that many large trees overhanging the streets compared to that trail.
Yeah.
So that's why I focused on that. And
There are other right-of-ways, though, in terms of the village responsibility for the abandoned right-of-ways right behind my property. And there's some major trees that are threatening.
Right.
So,
yeah, good point. That's a forgotten about right-of-way because there's not a road there.
Right.
want to give him any direction on that?
I've included an item in our budget for this sort of thing, which will all come under tree care, basically. And we just need to keep a routine like this where we're monitoring it on at least an annual basis.
Okay, excellent. Anyone else? All right. Well, I will move into my report here. So I have got a few things to mention about the Galena Festival, and so I'll come back to that. But just wanted to mention that my mayor's salary as of July was $10,483. The master plan and zoning code review continues on, and it continues to work in upcoming meetings. Development, as I mentioned in the last report, that John Wright had passed, and so I did speak to Romanelli and Hughes, and they are trying to pursue speaking with John Wright's attorney. And I know Grosingers are getting quite anxious to get something rolling on their property. So they are trying, they do have, I should say that Grosinger is honoring and respecting the arrangement that they have with Romanelli at this point, the relationship, but they are getting anxious to do something with it. With that being said, I know that Romanelli is very anxious to be talking to Wright's attorneys to find out what's going to happen with that land, because they would like the first right of refusal on that. Local business-wise, Dan Wendorf, who's the owner of the Wright building between the diner and Sena Thurman, has a new hair salon tenant on the second floor. Up in the window there, he does have a speculative drawing, although he did say that it's going to be very close to what that will look like. And so I had lots of people this week asking me, you know, who is the salon, and who's coming in, all that good stuff. So they are, I don't know who it is. I have a first name, but I won't say that because they're going to make a formal announcement in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm sure they're looking forward to doing that. You two are the first fans. I will go ahead and just mention Mortsy, as I attended a webinar on how to add zoning rules and benefits to your community. It was good to know that most of the things that were covered in that are things that we're already doing within our planning and zoning commission. Mortsy continues to be a great resource for grants. I reach out to them often. I also get a regular monthly grant report that I go through, meeting for back in person. Also, if anybody ever wants to join me at one of those meetings, you're welcome to do that. This is one of my favorite meetings that I go to, because I just think that it encompasses our entire region. They do a phenomenal job. It's just a kind of an ombudsman of information. So they also have them on Microsoft Teams, and you're always welcome to listen to them online if you don't attend in person. So if anybody ever wants that, I'm happy to forward that information on to you often. Delaware County Regional Planning actually drove up to Delaware with Cindy Cooper, who was a council person over in Sunbury. It's nice to meet with her. She asked me if we wanted to ride together, so it was kind of nice to have the company. The next meeting is September 30th. Kind of the biggest news is that Mike Sommer of Delaware County Administrator has resigned, and they're looking for a replacement. So, and the Delaware County Subdivision Regulations were approved. It's kind of a big deal with Mike Sommer, so he's been in a while. So just heading back to Galena Fest is that I know that it was a great time. I was there. It was hot as all get out, as everybody knows. No big surprise. Music was fantastic. Ton of fun. Always nice to have in the community. However, that was darkened a little bit this morning by kind of a plethora of phone calls that I received. One email that I feel that it's important and was asked to read was addressing that I think that we need as a council, because obviously this was not a village-sponsored event, but as a council, I think it's going to be very imperative that we really move forward quickly on getting some type of an event policy for our village. We don't have to recreate the wheel. We can look at many other communities who are much larger than us that have an event policy, so that we can hand something to those who want to have some type of affiliation or some event in the village, big or small, that will address various concerns. And unfortunately, we're having to learn a little bit of the hard way. So this was from Nick Raubmauer from the diner. And unfortunately, in speaking with all the businesses on the square, they were very disheartened with how their businesses were not supported during this event. So he says, I'm sending you this email for two reasons, I suppose. First, I need to vent and express my frustration. Second, I would like to see what I can do to prevent this situation next year. I found out this evening, and this is Friday, that all of the parking access to my restaurant outside of the gravel parking to the east will be unavailable for my guests tomorrow. While I understand that Galena Fest is important and certainly support it, I'm extremely upset for three reasons. One, this was not the case 2 years ago. There were no booths, trucks, etc. blocking my storefront, parking, or access to the restaurant. Two, I wasn't even approached, informed, asked, or anything. I only found out after they put up a cone saying no parking after midnight or be towed. Three, I am not okay with this happening next year. I am sorry to send such a negative message, but I am not very happy. I don't even know who to complain to, but I'm sure someone had to sign off on eliminating the parking. It would have been nice to be included. Saturday is often my busiest day of the week, and while I support the event, I do not do that at the expense of my business. We decided to close after lunch this year because 2 years ago our business was affected negatively. We essentially became a public restroom. We were, however, able to have a decent breakfast. Now it is possible that we'll not even be able to benefit from my busiest day. I heard from each of the businesses that they were down or less than both even. When they were approached for sponsorship, they were harassed. Every one of them mentioned that. It's unfortunately, they said very poor things about the village, along with myself. It's a small community, folks. And I was very taken back by things that were said by Son of Thurman and how it impacted their business and how they were harassed to the point where I've gotten four texts asking who is in charge, what do I do, because this can't continue to happen. So from a village perspective, and this is those are just the two I speak of, I've spoken to all the businesses that would be open on a Saturday, and all of them expressed very similar concerns. I also understand, and this will be a meeting upcoming, that the chief of fire was pretty upset about the way things were run, and we will be having a subsequent meeting because of the liability that was put on the village. So, sadly, I have to report that because I was asked to this evening, and I know that there are people who worked very hard on that event. It was obvious that they worked hard on that event. I saw them out there in the hot day. I get it. I just think that from a village standpoint, that these are things that are being brought to us as a village because, number one, people, I think, in a lot of respects, think this is a village-sponsored event. And so I always have to clarify that this is not a village-sponsored event, right? We all received the email on Friday about what any comment would be. So with that being said, I just think from a village standpoint that we need to have a policy amongst ourselves so whatever event comes to town, that we are better prepared to handle these situations. Number one, no parking in front of our current business people. One of the things I think that was asked is, you're serving beer. Why aren't you partnering with those in the village that have a license? You're going out of the town to do that. Who's benefiting? Everybody wanted to know who's benefiting from this. I don't know. So unfortunately, this is something that I felt was important to bring up. I was first and foremost asked to bring up, but secondly, felt that it was very important because I think that we have a learn from it as a village, and that's why I think that we can't really put off any further having some type of village policy about what we can control on our end for any event that comes in. There's people talking about future events that I think are super exciting. I'm looking forward to that. If Galena Fest wants to come again next year, we just need to make sure that we tighten up these things because all we do is close the roads and provide electricity, and then there was a donation. So everybody, we need to get a little tighter on this. I think at this point, this is something that internally as a village council, we need to do for the village, that we give to, they are a guest of the village. They are not an entity of the village. They are a guest of the village, just like anybody else who would come in. So with that being said, we need to be able to hand a guest of our village a policy of what we would expect from a village standpoint.
Right. I think we need to look forward to the future and say this is what we expect from an entity.
We can look at bigger, cities than us and look at their policies. It's
right.
Always the easiest way, I think, to start is by standing on the shoulders of
those that have already gone through some of these growing pains when it comes to events, things like that. We looked at other areas. So that's a great starting place.
Yeah.
I think the enforcement of this, I think, can be a challenge. For example, when someone does set something up in the wrong spot, who's the police officer there? By police officer, I mean who's enforcing it, checking it, and then secondarily, we actually need police officers to move people. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. That I think we've gotten a little bit lucky, you know, truly, and until now, and it looks like we've, you know, we need to improve immediately.
Well, and I this was also brought up that it seemed to be evident, and I don't know for a fact, so I'm not stating facts. It was brought to my attention. There was concern because they thought there was only one officer. There absolutely may have been more. They had felt a couple people came up to me and said there was only one officer, and that was at the beer tent. There was no water given to the vendors, as promised, so other community members were giving water to the vendors on the flatway. They felt that there should be the EMT up on the square because they were there, obviously. We went and visited them all and saw all their cool trucks, and they had a great exhibit there. But they needed to be having an actual presence, not just as a vendor, but as a presence up on the square, because if somebody up on the square had a heat stroke, they had to run all the way down Harrison Street to find somebody. You know what I'm saying? So they weren't, there wasn't like an ambulance set up. Yeah. So these were some of the things that were shared with me that I, again, just think are helpful for us to know that we say, okay, in our policy, these are the things that need to happen. If you have X number of people, we'll need to check with the police. How many police officers do you need for how many people are at an event? I don't know. You know, so those are the kind of things, you know, how much, you know, fire presence do we need? What kind of inspections need to be done? Those types of things that will need to be addressed, that we'll need to demand, because if we are insured under a policy, we need to make sure that we are very well covered.
Okay, so enforcement is an issue, I agree. Yeah, where do you start? But these things are done usually
streets that can be,
have to be done in good faith. So if you violate our event policy, or you shake down a local business owner, or threaten them, or, you know, try to strong arm them, you won't be invited back. We won't close the streets for your event going forward. You know, and I hate that it would have to be that way, but there has to be some consequence for anybody not abiding in good faith by a policy that they then have to sign in order to have an event in the village. So
it's the civic association. They put it on. Yeah, it is. It's their civic. They have a Sunbury civic. It's a big walnut.
So it's similar. It's a similar arrangement. I mean, it's a CGCA.
They work very closely with their
business.
Yeah. Very, 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 very closely.
Maybe that's.
But it seems to me the starting point here is to ask the businesses downtown. We've got an obligation to support the businesses downtown. Yeah. Ask them. How would we do this differently if we were setting a policy?
Yeah. I my first thought is I want to go the other direction. I want it to be their best over here. Whatever that looks like, in fact, let's make that a priority. Like, you start by saying, okay, the Galena Fest, first and foremost, is to highlight the businesses on the square. Like, that's the focus of it. And if you don't like that, then we're going to go find another group to do it, because that's what the Galena Fest is all about. It's all about, like, Galena.
Instead
of working against those that are here, we say, like, that is the entire focus. Every decision that's made is about each and every business.
And that includes the post office.
Absolutely. Sure.
What? Well, everyone on the floor. Yeah.
So think it's really about
it. I'm
always in the corner. We got it. So each one, like you say, the parking thing is an issue. It's always going to be an issue.
But yeah. If it was a bigger issue this year.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. We dedicate certain parking, whether it be around
that. I mean, there was never parking in places where there was parking this year.
Right. But, you know, it's a good point, though, is like, you know, and I'm thinking more long-term, too, on long-term projects. How does this keep Galena quaint is our first thing. On events like this, how does this benefit the whole community?
Right.
Or as much of the community as possible. This is not about making anybody look good or bad or this or that. This is about how does this help the businesses. I'm actually blindsided by it. I'm surprised to hear.
I was too.
And I'm a little upset. So you made, like, the thought that there would be somebody going to a business owner on our square and saying, you know what, forget you, we're going to do it this way. We've always done it this way, or we're going to do it this way going forward, whatever it is. It's not acceptable to me. So
if you look at the booth space, or whatever, however it's laid out, whatever the event, and you always have to offer those places in front of the businesses, they can use that however they want. Like, that's their spot. If you're taking a booth space in front of anybody, any place, whether that be a realtor or an accountant or whatever it is, they get those spaces in front of them to advertise, to do whatever, to shake hands. Like, it's always...
Or do nothing and just have their business.
Fine. Yeah. Let them be parking spots. Right. VIP parking spots for whoever they want. Right.
Well, 2 years ago, the diners set up.
That's what I was going to say. Exactly.
Yeah,
I was disappointed. This year,
yeah. Roasted chicken.
Correct.
Well, they had chicken salad sandwiches. And I don't know.
Roasted chicken. I remember eating it.
But then there were people sitting outside the diner, which I did not see that this time.
But they've all those businesses have got staffing issues because of the pandemic. So that might be one reason they didn't do that this year.
I was just saddened to hear that all of them.
Well, I think we should take a stab at creating some type of policy from a process improvement perspective. I reached out to my partner in Sunbury. They don't actually have one. He's going to double check, but they don't actually have one. So
okay.
I think maybe we can just kind of lead the way. I think Westerville may have.
Oh, absolutely. Westerville does, yeah.
So,
that's
who
I was thinking
about. Yeah. Westerville closes their whole downtown.
Yeah.
It's an hour.
So they've got to have some type of policy that maybe we can. I'll reach out to a few folks that are not there and ask.
And bring them another business.
Something even smaller than Westfield. There's a big gap between
them. Yeah.
I just think that we should also have a suggested layout, you know, which could be challenging.
This is going to take some time.
It'll take a little time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because
so here.
It is very important.
Mayor, let me take the reins on this.
Yeah.
All you. And we'll poke a little bit at this, Ruben. We'll get back to you guys hopefully by September with a couple of ideas. If there's anything else going on between now and then that we could fit, like this needs to be implemented before the next meeting. Nothing. We're shutting down the whole square.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see. We'll see. We'll get a report on this.
Okay. So, gang, sorry to be the bearer of not such great news on that, but because I don't want to negate the hard work that everybody's put into that, and that is appreciated. And I think people had a great time. I do. I mean, we were there. We had a great time. Just watching on Facebook, a lot of people had a great time.
But that great time can't be at the expense of our friends on the square.
Right.
It has to. It has to. Make them better, too.
Okay, so with that said, Suzanne, all you. We're getting lots of new residents, and the next council meeting date or something. If you're not going to be here and you know ahead of time, if you could just give us a call so that we know that we have at least 5 people here, just in case you have an ordinance that needs to be passed. And the most important date is that January 4th meeting. We'll need everybody here to pass the budget. I know, it's awful. It's just the way it falls on the calendar this year. It's horrible. But we have to pass the budget then. That's not all I have, unless somebody has questions. Good. Good. Okay. That's great. Payment of invoices for August. Any questions on those?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go ahead and approve the invoices.
I'll second it.
Great. Roll call vote, please.
Ed?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Reagan?
Yes.
And David?
Yes.
Motion is passed. Pay the invoices for August. Approval of financial statements. May I get a motion to approve the financial statements?
So moved.
Second. Thank you, Ruben. All right. Roll call vote, please.
Kathy?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
David?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
All right. Motion is passed to approve the financial statement. Anything regarding the code compliance report or the wastewater treatment report that you have for Jeff? Thank you. All right, I'll move forward reading ordinance number 2021-13, the third reading as an emergency, an ordinance certifying delinquent sewer service accounts to the county auditor for lien certification for the period of August 31st, 2020 through August 31st, 2021, and declaring an emergency. May I get a motion to pass the ordinance certifying the delinquent sewer service?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Eric?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Kathy? Yes. Ruben?
Yes.
And David?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you all. The motion is passed to for ordinance number 2021-13, ordinance certifying the delinquent sewer service accounts to the county auditor for lien certification for the period of August 31st through August 31st, 2021. Ordinance number 2021-15, first reading is emergency and ordinance conditionally accepting the public improvements at the retreat of Dustin Phase 1 and 2, implementing the maintenance period and bond, releasing the performance bond, all in accordance with the development agreement. Is there any hurry to move forward on that? Or any urgency? Or can we continue to have a second?
The bonds are already in place. Reason we're doing it is because when we originally did the Phase 1, it was the exact amount was incorrect on the bond. It was an estimate, and then when we got the bond, we got the exact amount, and we just got the performance bond on Phase 2.
The performance bonds need to be released, I think.
Performance and maintenance bonds are the ones that were.
Maintenance bonds have been in place for a while. That's right. Other things. Came in the days predated.
Do we need to take action tonight?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make a motion to suspend the rules for ordinance 2021-15.
A second, please.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mike. Roll call vote, please.
Yeah. Eric.
Yes, this is to suspend
yes.
For ordinance 2021.
Yes.
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Ruben?
Yes.
David?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion is passed. To be read as an emergency. And make a motion to accept the ordinance conditionally accepting the public improvements with retreat adjustment, Phase 1 and 2, implementing the maintenance period and bond. Can I get a motion? Thank you for a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ruben.
Yes.
David.
Yes.
Todd.
Yes.
Mike. Yes.
Motion is passed on ordinance number 2021-15 as an emergency. And ordinance 2020-13 was passed at the organizational meeting in January. This ordinance was for the release of a performance bond and acceptance of maintenance bond in my Phase 1, but the amount of the maintenance bond was an estimate and differed from the actual amount. So that's just, just reading it for the record. All right, I already went through them once, and let's go ahead, Ruben, with the BSCNG Fire Board report.
Nothing new. The survey, it was approved. We voted and it was approved to get the actual survey done. But I don't have a date yet on when they're actually going to begin, so I keep it posted. Other than that, I don't know how HR stuff. But nothing major.
Okay, great. Thank you. Kathy, anything I missed on planning and zoning?
No, that the August meeting was canceled.
Thank you. Anything for City?
I don't know of anything to report.
Okay. Did you all make this call?
No.
Okay. All right. Any other commission reports? Todd, I know you talked about cemetery.
For 2022, such as signage, et cetera. Yeah.
Great. Any, the other business, we have noted Halloween.
Yeah, this, we had discussion, I believe it was our last council meeting, but we had two people missing, and it was stated, I think, it might have been Eric and Ruben were missing. And
what?
And it was decided, it's a topic with kids, and so to bring it back up, I think it started out, I think you had mentioned, Jill, that Sunbury has gone to Sunday, October 31st.
Oh.
Yeah. And we currently are there. So they want to make sure those with children well and safe and making that.
I think Thursday's fine. I don't. The only challenge is we've talked about is having the community split.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you have kids going to the same school, on different days,
they're all hopped up on different days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then the residents get swamped, right?
Yeah. We'll have people here.
Yeah, that's true. You have twice the number of people.
Yeah. But it was our Thursday day before the Sunday.
Well, Sunday is Halloween, right? Sunday is
Thursday.
Did we say something about having it on Saturday here?
Yeah, we kicked out
of that. The reason why I say this is because it typically is overlapping with all the communities.
Right.
We have ours on Saturday, mm-hmm. and theirs on Sunday, that's fine. Because Thursday night, I'm just thinking, as a parent, God bless the teachers that's going to do all that sugar over us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get them to go to school on Friday, and then you have to go beg your parents. I mean, it just, I don't know.
I don't really care. I mean, honestly, it's definitely good on the weekend.
I'd like to keep the community together, is my opinion.
Yeah, last year we had a lot of confusion because of, the weather.
Yeah.
I don't foresee that being a problem this year. Set a time and, stick
with it.
Friday or Saturday, to me, sounds
fun.
The only thing I caution about the weekend is there's more traffic, people are out doing Halloween parties.
Well, and Friday, you have a football game.
That's true, football game.
Like high school football. So, I mean, maybe Saturday?
There's obviously trade-offs for whatever it is.
I don't know. I think Saturday.
I just personally don't like Thursday.
Yeah.
I'll let you with.
I was more of just being a traditionalist.
That's trick-or-treat
now, right? It's always been the Thursday.
I grew up. The
31st. Yeah.
It's the
31st. Sunday's the
31st.
No matter what
day
you leave,
in Central Ohio, it's been the Thursday before.
Typically.
So the deal is, I guess, I want to decide, do you want to stay the same day as Sunbury, or do you want to do it?
There is value in having it at least on the same day as the community next door because of policing, because people know, okay, if it's happening in Sunbury, it's happening in Galena. You just watch out for kids on the street. It's a safety issue.
Yeah.
And we're so close together. I mean, we're share schools and, I think it's a safety issue to have it.
Do they
want
to pick up
phone?
And you just want to all be in
if somebody wants to make a motion, we'd have to change it on the calendar.
What day is Sunday? What day is doing it on Sunday?
Yes. You could throw it out if you want to, but I'll make a motion that we move. Move Halloween to Sunday, October 31st.
Just for this year. We can next year we can reevaluate.
Trick. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. I'll go with a second.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Todd. All
those
in favor say aye.
Aye.
Although, wait, what time?
Right, the motion is passed for October 31st.
Whatever time Sunday is.
Does
the GGCA do that, or do they want to still do that?
DGCA's never done that.
They've never done that.
Always
okay. Okay, very good. All right, we'll start working on that.
Okay.
All right.
we were talking about trunk or treat and stuff last year, so we might do it different. So, okay, excellent. So this evening we will need to go into executive session. So,
ask if there's anything else you'd like to discuss.
Oh, well, sure.
I have two tiny things.
I'm sorry.
I've been waiting on others.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Just very minor, but I'm working to pull some people together for September 28th, meet the candidates for the Glamour School. And so we're going to have to hold that here at Village Hall. And this is just something I'm throwing out. You guys can take it or leave it, but I think it's time to change the combination to the building, whether it be the combination itself or changes to the key lock and then we track who has keys to Village Hall. Just a thought of mine. What do you guys think?
I like the combination. And I think it would be better perhaps maybe we get on maybe a cadence of changing it so it's not remaining the same all the time. Mm-hmm. And we just have tighter accountability of who actually gets that combination. Maybe they're still out of form as to why they needed it. I mean, I think maybe a tighter process could cause some control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only reason people would get a code would be for an event, and it's a different code than the code to enter the building.
Mm.
But I don't even know when the last time the code to enter the building was. But
yeah.
Yeah, Michelle and I can change that if somebody wants to get me a list of everybody that has the code. I can do that.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe a policy. I mean, is there some kind of policy about who comes in the building when and that type of thing? Not so much. Yeah. I just
not really ever been a problem.
Right.
You know, for all the years I've been around the combination of exactly the same program, I'm sure it's been around many more years before.
Yeah.
So I just thought we either change the combination or we go to do something.
Since Kathy brought up other, did our mic system ever get used for July 4th?
No.
So they decided not to use it?
I think they ended up having some volunteers.
They sent someone to look at it. The person came here and then, well, I don't know, I guess it wasn't up to their...
No, I just don't think they needed it.
Neither. Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
That's all I have to
do. Okay. No worries. Anybody else? All right, give you all a chance to speak. All right, so being that this is our first executive session with new technology, we need a motion
to go.
I was just going to kind of explain for those who are out there. Yeah, that's okay.
I'm a reader. I don't know if you have that on there. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, friends, we are back. So may I get a motion to come back into regular session, please?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mike. Get a second, please.
Second.
All right. We're going to do roll call vote on that.
All those
in favor, please. Oh, I'm sorry. It is 9:42. Thank you. And all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So at this point, we will go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
I'll make that motion, too.
Thank you, Mike. And the second, Ruben's got that as well. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great night. Meeting has ended at 9:42. Have a great night. Thank you.
Were we back on with the